Guess I'm gonna have to hang up and try again. Schreier.
Mordechai Willig.
Okay. Rebbe, I'm gonna mute everyone and then we're gonna record. Hold on. Rebbe, did Rebbe press star 6?
Yes.
Rebbe pressed, yeah. Okay. Kevra, welcome to conference call number 152. We wish Rebbe a mazel tov and his grandson Bris, and thank Rebbe for his dedication in spite of the difficult schedule of making himself available.
I also have to apologize for two things. One, I came on late due to technical difficulties, and two, with Rabbi Schreier's permission, it was assumed that there's no way I can do 29 questions in one shiur. I calculated that 14 of them were related to Sukkos, so the decision was reached that since there are going to be 4 Wednesdays in a row without a shiur, Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur, Sukkos, and Sukkos Torah, that we would postpone the Sukkos till next week. We'll have 2 consecutive weeks, and this week I will try to finish the other 15 questions which do not pertain to the holiday of Sukkos. Without further ado, let us begin. So we have last week, 2 I never got to. They'll put it at the last minute. Can food be moved from a blech to a warming drawer on Shabbos? Now, we do know that a person may move a pot from one covered fire to another covered fire, but one may not move a pot from a covered fire to an uncovered fire. The problem is twofold. One, you may stoke the coals, which is just a fire nowadays. And two, it looks like cooking. So those are the problems. With respect to a warming drawer, there's no problem of looking like cooking because no one cooks in a warming drawer. However, there is a problem of shemi yachata b'gacholim. All warming drawers are adjustable. You may decide to adjust the heat, which of course is not permitted on Shabbos. There is, however, one ace in the hole. It's called toch betit. Literally means you smear it with mud. In the olden days, they would have a problem with their ovens. They would take the whole surface of the door to the oven and put a whole bunch of mud on it. And it would have to take a stick to break it. It's the question in halacha, you're allowed to break it on Shabbos even. And that would permit the individual on the following grounds, that since it's so complicated to undo it, you'll remind yourself that it's Shabbos. So that's why, in my opinion, comes to a warming drawer. If you can find a way to cover it, that's fine. But the covering is supposed to be what we call a hecker. You walk into the house, you see a blech on the fire, you know it's Shabbos, you're not going to adjust the fire. Here, the problem is the warming drawer, the pot is inside, and how are you going to have a hecker if you put some tinfoil under the pot? It's not visible from the outside. And some of the warming drawers have adjustments on the outside before you even open the warming drawer. And some, as soon as you open it, but you can't see the foil on the bottom. So if the adjustment is not seen until you open the warming drawer, which exists in some of them, you can take a piece of tin foil, put it both under the pot, and slide it up the top in the front. So as soon as you open the warming drawer, you can see that piece of tin foil. That would be considered to be grufa, in my opinion, covered. And you could move it from the oven, blech, to that warming drawer on Shabbos. If that's impossible, then you have this tuch petit. Now, the Orchos Shabbos thinks that even one piece of tape is sufficient. I don't agree. Many, many pieces of tape or some other silly putty, something to make it complicated to adjust it, that would permit it, even if it was not on the blech, even if it's coming from the refrigerator, as long as it's no official promises, as long as it's dry. Okay, question number two. Are hair extensions which last 4 months considered to be a chatzitza? So as a general rule, ideally, we remove everything. Everything. The only thing we allow is hair dye, because you can't remove hair dye. But hair extensions can be removed. To my mind, it's similar to some of these nail extensions that people have. Also, they can also be on for quite a number of weeks. And I don't think it's quite 4 months. All these cases ideally should be removed. But if you're in a pinch, you can't remove it for whatever reason. The woman will refuse to remove them, or it's too inconvenient, whatever. So, b'di'evet, after the fact, we assume that it's good. Why? It's met what's called linoy, for beautification purposes. For beautification purposes, it's okay. That's one of the reasons why we allow the hair dye. But the hair dye has another advantage. It's not a separate surface. It's absorbed into the hair. That we don't have over here. That's why ideally it should be removed. But if it cannot, for whatever reason, the tevila, the immersion, is kosher. Okay, the new questions. One, when someone is fasting and wakes up before they fast, he declared he was planned to be before he went to bed, and he eats. Is he required to say Birchas HaTorah before eating so he can say a bracha Rishona and a bracha Achrona? Or if he wakes up to take a drink in the middle of the night, does he need to wash Nekel Vasa before taking a drink? Two separate questions. The first one is absolutely no. There's no need to make a Birchas HaTorah. It's wrong to make it at that point. You're going back to sleep again. You will not make a Birchas HaTorah. Even if you're not going back to sleep again, it's not ideal. It's before the fast, it's considered still part of the night. You should have what you want to eat. Then get dressed, and then you make all the brachos, etc. As far as the Negel Vasar, so that's a whole story. The whole issue of Negel Vasar is clouded. It's based primarily on what's called a Ruach Ra, an evil spirit. And many Rishonim assume that we no longer have that evil spirit. It's relevant to all bunch of things in Siman Dalet. As a matter of fact, they're coming up to Yom Kippur, so I should mention it now. The Smag says in Hilchos Yom Kippur that today, when you wake up in the morning in Yom Kippur, you should not wash your hands. What about the Ruach Ra? You don't have a Ruach Ra nowadays, he says. So therefore, if you follow that general principle, then you would not have to wash your hands three times in the middle of the night in order to drink the water or eat in the middle of the night. You would not have to. And that's how we pass in the halacha. Individuals who are stricter about all the other things that they wash for, if you look in Siman Dalet and Shulchan Aruch Arachayim, so then if they want to be strict for this too, it would be understandable. But for most of us, I repeat, for most of us, there's no need to wash three times in the middle of the night before taking a drink. Number two, someone had a minute to get up before day of Rosh Hashanah to be not sleeping on Rosh Hashanah. Should that be before Alos HaShachar or Netzach Hamah? Now, it's interesting. This minig is found in Siman Tov Kuf Pei Gimel in the Shulchan Aruch, not to sleep on Rosh Hashanah, based on a so-called Yerushalmi, which doesn't really exist. My the damech bereishah the damech mazle. If he sleeps in Rosh Hashanah, his mazel is bad. Now, in the Ramah, it's quoted as sleeping by day in Rosh Hashanah. And that meaning is kept to this day. Many people, we try not to sleep on Rosh Hashanah in the afternoon. Poskim say, you don't sleep in bed, you fall asleep on the recliner. That's okay, which happens to me just about every single year. Okay. However, there are those, quote some others, that it doesn't mean when you wake up in the afternoon of Rosh Hashanah. It means in the morning of Rosh Hashanah. How do you define the morning is this question. Quote to the Kaf HaChayim, Sifkot Lamates means Alo Sashaka. That's a long, long time before sunrise. 72 minutes minimally. If you follow the 16 degrees, it can be much more than that. 80-something minutes before. That's a Kafachayim. It's interesting. Reb Shlomo Zalman says the whole thing doesn't apply nowadays. And Halicha Shlomo Rosh Hashanah Per Gimel Sifkav Gimel doesn't apply nowadays. We assume this so-called Yerushalmi refers to the day and not to the early morning. The Dirshu, footnote 15, quotes it. Interestingly, Pisgei Tshuvos there, footnote 86, says according to the Vilna Gaon, if you want to get up early, it's good enough to get early before sunrise. That's a big difference. Sunrise now is getting later and later. It's well after 6. It's on Sukkot, it's already after 7. So by the time Yom Kippur comes around, Rosh Hashanah comes around, probably, I'm guessing it'll be something like 6:45. Much easier to get up before then. I'll likely be up before then because we start davening at 7:15. But before the Lo Shachar, probably will not be up. And why should it depend upon that? So the corner of the Vilna Gaon, the Mishmaros change at sunrise and not at Alo Sashachar. And that's why since the new Mishmar begins then, that means that that's when the judgment begins. It should be up when the judgment begins. If you look carefully, in Tosus and Brachos of Gimel and Aleph, they clearly hold that the third Mishmar ends of the night ends at Alo Sashachar. And the Vilna Gaon, as Chiddushim there, disagrees strongly. Says, no. It ends at sunrise. This is the question of Sof Zman Kriyat Shema. We are lenient, most of us, 3 hours after sunrise. So therefore, if you want to be keep this halacha, it's enough to get up before sunrise. It's also relevant for those who have a minute of slichas and want to do these slichas at the right time. The wrong time, it's not our topic for today, but I cannot not mention it to you. The wrong time is before midnight. That's the wrong time. Just returned from Eretz Yisrael on Motzei Shabbos. I went to the Kotel to watch to hear the Sfaradi Slichas, which began at the dot of midnight. Midnight, I mean, they began earlier, but the Yogim Lamidos, they started the dot of midnight. It was about 20 to 1. Here it's a little bit later. And we have Slichas, we can start a little before. I think in my shul it's called for 12:45. And you get to the Yudgim Lamidus at 12:55, whenever it is, that's what's the right time to do it. But ideally, if you can't do it at that hour, you do it, it's called Bashmores. When does Hashmores Aboka end? According to the Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Berurah, it ends at Alos HaShachar. Nobody that I know davened so early. But according to the Vilna Gaon, it ends at sunrise. And in my shul, the first minyan certainly will say the Slichas before sunrise. And could be even the second minyan, Aseres Yemei Teshuva, may do it before sunrise, which is the perfect time, according to the opinion of the Vilna Gaon. This is pointed out by the Achronim, that this is something which is okay, and it's called the Pisgei Tshuvos, footnote 86. Next question. On Rosh Hashanah, when eating the Simonim, when should you make the bracha of Bar Prayer? It's before or after Hamotzi. The Siman of Bar Pradama, do we make a bracha on? The answer is as follows. This is also found in the Pisgei Tshuvos in the same Siman, Tavkuf Pei Gimel, footnote 32. The meaning is to do it after Netilas Yadayim, like the Tur and the Ramah and the Matafrayim. Why? To make no separation between Netilas Yadayim and Hamotzi. Rav Sternberg throws in that it also will help you if you're eating the fruits which are wet for that chumra of having the Netilas Yadayim before Dabar Shetivu B'Mashke. That's how we follow. However, he does quote in the footnote 33 that there is a different opinion of the Maril who did it before the Netilas Yadayim. So we can't be terribly opposed to that custom, but at least in my house we do it after the Netilas Yadayim, and if it's an Adama, it's an Adama. No difference between Eitz and Adama. Next question. Meaning of Nayin Paspalter during Aseret Shemei Tshuva, does it include A, Stella Dora cookies, B, pretzels, breakfast, C, breakfast cereals? Cookies, yes, that's Paskistin. Pretzels, yes, it's Paskistin. Breakfast cereals, in my opinion, absolutely not. I don't know if you breakfast cereals as Paskistin. It doesn't look like a Pas at all. Others disagree. Next question. On Erev Yom Kippur, should the mitzvah eat two meals or is one enough? Does one need to eat bread at both sudos if required? Does the mitzvah of eating Erev Yom Kippur start at night? Three important questions. Okay. So the Dirshu, Tuf Resh Dalet, footnote 5, quotes the Minchas Chinuch, mitzvah Shin Yud Gimel Sivkotin Tesvav. Don't have to have bread at all. Never have to have bread. Just eat. No bread necessary at any meals. However, others disagree. The Magen Avraham says that the mitzvah begins at night. The Vilna Gaon and most others, Yad Avraham and Aruch HaShulchan, disagree. It's based upon a Rashi and Ksubis on Daf Hei Amud Aleph. It's interesting. The question of two or one is also fascinating. The whole idea, this is found in Piskei Tshuvos, footnote 14 in Tuf Resh Dalet. He says that the Minchas Chinuch says you don't have to have bread because he thinks, so he calls it Xeris HaKosef. It's a din, no reason given. However, those who say like the Stechemim, they should have the strength to fast, would require bread. And he quotes the custom of having two sudos of bread on Erev Yom Kippur. This is quoted from the Kafachayim Sivkon based on the Arizal. So it's not based so much on Nigler, it's based upon Nistar. Some say you even wear Shabbos clothes even for the first meal. And I know that, for example, I know in the local yeshiva where I live in Riverdale, the Telsi Yeshiva, they have two full sudas. They have a suda in the morning, late morning, after davening and some learning. A full suda with mirrors, and like a Shabbos, like a suda with washing and benching. That's before Katzos. And then, of course, they have the suda of seconds with washing and benching closer to Shkia as well. In my house, we didn't grow up that way. I don't do it. I'm not against it. But in the morning, I don't necessarily wash for that meal. But the most important thing is to eat a lot and to drink a lot, so you shouldn't be too hungry, you shouldn't chas v'shalom dehydrate on Yom Kippur. Next question. What is the preferable time to tovel Erev Hashanah of Yom Kippur? Is it permissible to tovel before chatzos? If yes, how early is allowed? Once again, the same thing goes. The Ramah calls the custom in Tav Kuf Pei Aleph Siv Dalet to tovel Erev Rosh Hashanah, and the Mishnah Berurah Chavav quotes from the Chayadah, not more than an hour before Chatzos. Chatzos is close to 1, not before 12. Similarly, in Hilchos Yom Kippur, same thing. Klal Kuf Mem Dalet Siv Zayin. This is exactly the same thing. I don't know why. I never understood why. So the Piskei Tshuvos gave me a hint. He said, look what I wrote. And Simon Reish Samach, footnote 22. You know what it comes from? It comes from Kabbalah, from the Arizal. So those who are careful about Kabbalistic matters should worry about it. Those who are not so careful shouldn't worry about it at all. Even the Piskei Tshuvos agrees in Tuf Resh Vav Sif Yud Beis that you can even do it the night before Yom Kippur, if what he calls Lachatz Utzchak. If everyone in Riverdale would wait until an hour before Chatzos to go to the mikvah and Erev Hashanah of Yom Kippur would be a disaster. As a matter of fact, many people, something I'm included, will go even before Slichas, early in the morning. Maybe the water is more clean, there's more time. So now I understand why, if the reason is based upon Kabbalah, not everyone is so careful to follow the Kabbalistic notions. The next question. On Yom Kippur, is it permitted to use deodorant or baby powder? So, the Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Tov Resh Yud Dalet Sif Aleph, Osu losuch afahaver azuma. One may not anoint oneself even to remove a bad smell. Even though one may wash to remove dirt, but one may not anoint. And therefore, there are many authorities, the Dersh of footnote 1, because Rav Yoshev and Rav Nissen Karelitz, who prohibits spray deodorants on Yom Kippur. I never understood this. I printed in my sefer, Am Mordechai and Moed, that I thought a spray deodorant, that's not sicha. Sicha is using some kind of creams or maybe even somewhat viscous oils. A spray deodorant is just water. It's sprays like water. You can shake it up in a can. It's just exactly like water. We call that rechitza. Rechitza is permissible in order to remove a bad smell. As a matter of fact, the Dersh of footnote 1 quotes in the older CO, you take soap and you reduce it to a liquid. It's called a mei sabon, soap liquid. It's permissible. I would think he would permit spray as well. And I saw, courtesy of Rabbi Shapiro, Shlita from the library, that there was an Israeli poskim who agreed with me and say that deodorant spray is okay. It's considered to be rechitza. I thought that was true, and I still think it's true, especially now that I found out that there are other gedolim in Eretz Yisrael who say exactly the same thing. There I wrote about in the Mishnah Berurah Oz V'Hodor, it's a Kodan Aleph quotes a dispute on this very point. He used to wash the hands of the Kohanim to make it fancy. They would use scented water. Some say yes, some say no. In my opinion, it's permissible on these grounds. And there's also Rabbeinu Manoach, I quote there, and Shvizas also Perigim HaLachates, who says, why is it that the Shulchan Aruch said that Rechitza for to remove dirt is okay and Sicha is not okay? What's the difference? So he says as follows. He says something remarkable, that Sicha was only for the wealthy and it was not noticeable that it was Lahav Razuma. It's kind of a Maris Ayin. Let me tell you, deodorants are used by everybody. They're supposed to be wealthy to afford deodorant today in America. And therefore, if the Rabbeinu Manoach is right, it's no problem to begin with. The powder issue, the Piskei Tshuvos and Sof Reish Yudav Os Aleph, Asur's powder. Why? He says powder is included in the category of Sicha. I was very doubtful about that. Hilchos Avelos, Simon Shin Pei Aleph Sivov, says that these kinds of powders, these cosmetic powders, are treated like rechitza. Rechitza. And rechitza is different than sicha. Rechitza is permissible to remove a bad smell. So therefore, a powder deodorant would be okay. And Rav Feivel Cohen Zal has in his Biurim there that there was a custom to be lenient about cosmetics. He didn't understand why it was so, because Sicha is more strict. If it's only considered to be Rechitza, which is what others have said, there's more room to be lenient. It's like possibly one could argue that some of these, how should I say it, these powders, if you're using the powder as a deodorant, underarm deodorant, I think for sure it should be okay. It's not considered to be sicha. And I found it in one of the sforim that was printed in Eretz Yisrael recently. As a cosmetic on the face, much more complicated. Even if you view it as rechitza, as the Shulchan Aruch says, but rechitza on Yom Kippur is usur, unless it's to somehow to remove dirt or something like that. And my Rebbe would say that the definition of is eino shel tanug means to eliminate a negative. And even though there's a positive as well, it's okay. For example, if you get dirty, you're allowed to wash. When you're washing your dirty, it's even more pleasurable than when you're washing your clean. Get rid of the dirt. But it doesn't matter, since the impetus is to get yourself out of a position of negative to a position of, we'll call, neutral. And I'm not passing this way, lahalacha, but there could be some women that they view themselves without their cosmetics as in a negative situation, and the little power they put on just restores them to a level ground. And if that's the case, even though they may have some enjoyment at the end, but to eliminate a negative, one could possibly eke out a heter for those who were doing it anyway. But I would avoid it. But as far as an underarm powder deodorant, I would say it's permissible. Let's go to the next question. Last Yom Kippur, someone was rushing to shul to Kol Nidre. Realized when he got to shul, 15-minute walk, that he forgot to change out of his leather shoes. He davened in his socks. Is he required to walk home in his socks? Very good question. Very good question. If you take a look in the Bir Halacha, Siman Tov Reish Yud Dalad, Siv Dalad, to Maskev Ahu, he quotes a Shaila. The Ramah says there's a heter for an istinus. Someone who's very particular. And if it's raining, he says you can wear his shoes. And some there say, doesn't only mean if it's raining. It means any person who's particular, hard to walk without shoes, may do so. In particular, if he's doing this for a mitzvah. And he leaves it as a tzarechim. He's not sure. Now, here, the person going home is a mitzvah to go to sleep. So he should be able to be awake for Yom Kippur davening. Having said that, I have a different solution, which can be used in other contexts as well. I'll give an example. We just had Tisha B'Av on Sunday. So I told everybody, make sure to bring your Tisha B'Av sneakers to the Beis Medrash before Shabbos. So there's no problem, but not everybody remembered. Someone I knew forgot. What did I do? I gave him my sneakers to walk home to the bunk and bring back his sneakers. So then later on, I put on my sneakers. The same thing can be done over here. You find someone who remembered to bring the sneakers to do you a favor. You can find someone who's willing to take the 15-minute walk and go back. That's an extra half an hour of his time. But Yom Kippur is a good time for Gemilas Chasodin. You find someone, maybe even a family member, who has the sneakers to go back to your house as soon as it's an Erev. These days, most neighbors have an Erev to bring back your sneakers for you. But if that's impossible, there may be room for leniency. The person's called an istinus. He cannot handle walking home with socks. In some places, it may even be dangerous to walk home with socks. There could be sharp items. Then for sure, it'd be okay to put on shoes if there is no alternative, as it's found already in the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, next question. Is there an issue wearing a Shabbos suit for a family simcha bar mitzvah chasana on a weekday? What's the basis of this question? So when I saw the question, it reminded me of a recent controversy where one of the greatest rabbis in the Holy Land was quoted as saying, "It's not permissible to eat cholent on Thursday night because it's miyuchas for Shabbos." He later made kind of a retraction. This idea of cholent Thursday night didn't exist when I was young, but today it became a rage. And there were all kinds of tachazes that people have Shabbos to kafun on Friday. And so that happened all the week long. So the bottom line, if that would be prohibited, then one could argue that a Shabbos suit for bar mitzvah might also be prohibited. But neither is it. The cholent is okay and the Shabbos suit is okay. It's primarily a suit for Shabbos. The fact that you wear it for a bar mitzvah or a chasana is not degraded in any way. On the contrary, I was once asked to speak about dress down Shabbos in Teaneck, New Jersey. So I said, you know, what you wear on Shabbos is what you wear to a wedding. Most people, you go to a wedding, even to this day, they're wearing a suit, they're wearing a tie, and they're wearing either a white or a light-colored shirt. And that's the criterion they should use to dress for Shabbos. So a wedding is exactly the criterion that I do use. I emphasized at the time, the rabbi there asked me to emphasize, that's true for the entirety of Shabbos. The whole Shabbos, not just in shul, from the beginning to the end of Shabbos, you should dress properly. You don't have to wear a jacket the whole time, but a shirt and a tie is appropriate to wear all the time. It's not right if you would dress down on Shabbos afternoon into all kinds of lower levels, which I'm not going to describe right now. It's not our topic. But again, I'm just pointing out that since I use the wedding as a criterion as to what to dress on Shabbos, so if you're wearing the Shabbos garment to a wedding, that's great. So we can work in both directions. Okay, next question. What are my thoughts on the Kiddush and Shulam Rosh Hashanah as the custom in some yeshivas? If happening, when should it take place? If happening, should typical spirits serve the Kiddushim throughout the year be served or avoided since there's much more davening left? Number one, I'm opposed to the entire thing. Yeshivas are different. Yeshivas are different. Yeshivas are all my yeshiva boys. They're able to go out before Shkiyas Shofar, have some cookies and some soda to give them some more strength. Typically, their davening takes longer than our davening. Some yeshivas go till 4 o'clock, and they need strength to daven. That's why that custom exists. Rav Hankins, I was viscerally opposed to the minute, because you can't eat before the tkiyas. He went as far as to say, if you have to do this, you should blow 30 kolos, and then have a kiddush, even though it's between the 30 and the remaining 70, which the Shulchan Aruch says is better not to interrupt. That's how strongly he felt about that matter. But my objection is not Rav Henkins. My objection is once people get out of the zone, it's very difficult to get them back in. The proof? Simchat Torah. That's the one day of the year when we do have a kiddush before the end of the Kriyas, before the Chasanin. And to get people to come upstairs from the social hall to the shul is not so easy. And then it's more of a lighthearted mood afterwards, even though we do a Simchas Torah, but Rosh Hashanah is not time for lightheartedness, and therefore I believe it should not be done. There's yet another reason not to do it. It says in the Ramah, Umarichim Piyutim until after Chatzos. After Chatzos. What that means, in my opinion, is that a person should be fasting l'chatzchil according to the Maril till after Chatzos. I'll tell you why. Because you don't want to be eating at a time they're being judged. As we say in the Sana Tokef, everyone passes single file before Kodesh Baruch Hu on Rosh Hashanah. What would you rather be doing when you pass through single file? You'd rather be in the middle of shul with a master in front of you, focused on Avodas Hashem? Or would you rather be with cake in mouth, kosher cake and kosher soda, but you're still engaging in physical activity? And that's why I believe one should not eat anything before Chatzos. Nothing. Because you want to be involved in the holy work. That's why, according to some, you should get up before Alos HaShachar or before sunrise, depending on when the judgment begins. And I say, if you sleep past that time, when you're sleeping, you're doing nothing wrong. No one can sin in one sleep. But to be awake and be eating, once you're eating, you're talking, and this and that, and chalilas and lashon hara, that's inappropriate, in my opinion, before Chatzos. And our shul, we do not allow it at all. Even though in the yeshiva, the Telz yeshiva nearby, they do have the break, and there's nothing wrong. I'm assuming that they go much longer until they finish, and I'm assuming they're more eager to get these bachur back to the zone of kavana. I'm assuming there's no lashon hara, and therefore, there it's okay. But in our shul, in my opinion, it is not okay. We do not allow it. I have to comment on the second part, even though it shouldn't be, because if happening, when should take place, it shouldn't take place. I mentioned Rav Henkin's chiddush after 30 calls, before 30 calls, is the make in most places, if they haven't. And if happening, spirits, do you mean whiskey? Chas v'sholem to have whiskey throughout the year. There's no davening left. You want to make kiddush and shul? A number of years ago, we established a kiddush every single Shabbos. Every single Shabbos a kiddush and shul. Why? So the people should be able to socialize a little bit afterwards, and they shouldn't talk during davening. But the kiddush I typically make the Kiddush myself in the shul, and most weeks I don't even drink the Kiddush because I don't have to force me to have some extra cookies downstairs as I'm trying to wash my weight. But if there's, let's say, a simcha, bar mitzvah, an offer for Kiddush for a baby girl, any of these kinds of things, I will have it. But I will. It's usually it's going to be on grape juice. No grape juice, you want to have wine. Wine's fine. But liquor, I'm against liquor completely. I have to confess, on some kiddushin, you may see a bottle of liquor on one of the tables. I'm careful to see to it that no one drinks too much. If I found that someone would get drunk, chas v'sholem, or too intoxicated, I would take the bottle and I would break it and never let it happen again. I think these, quote, spirits should not be served the kiddushin throughout the year, and it should be avoided all the time. And the same goes for weddings and bar mitzvahs and shalom zochers. It's terrible. You see people, even youngsters, drinking until they're simply intoxicated. It's a terrible, terrible thing. It could even be addictive. Terrible. So forgive me for this little over-addictive. I have to say that I'm against all this drinking. It becomes a terrible habit for some people. Shem Yirach. Next question. Should the kittel be removed before davening Marav and Yom Kippur? No. Our minhag is to wear the kittels through Marav as well. Next question. Assuming 100 kolos from Rosh Hashanah, what are the minhagim of chumras that should be followed in terms of the sounds of the kolos and taking breaths in between kolos? Now, as far as the sound of the kolos, there's no problem with the tekiah. There's a chumra. The tekiah should be long enough. How long is long? In my opinion, based on a wonderful man, Mr. Chaim Ashkenazi from the Brewers community, he's the one who discovered the Nixon tapes, an expert in sound. He calculated that in order to have the tekiah be long enough for the Shvarim Trua, 3 seconds. Rav Moshe said 4 seconds. He says 3 seconds. All right? Yehav Shal Tzamtzem. I try to make sure it's at least 3 seconds. That's the chumrah. I think it's a din, really, with respect to the shvarim trua, that the tekiah should be 3 seconds. Is another chumrah? Should be straight. No, stop. Straight. It's called tekiah. That's the chumrah which our Baal tekiah does. Some have trouble, but I'm not going to say it's possible if you went at the end. But that somehow is came to happen to some people. Much better just have it straight. That's it. That's the chumrah of the tekiah. As far as the kolos of the shvarim, in our shul, based upon Tosfos, it's the same thing. A straight sound. Straight sounds. There are those who say the word shever means not that the three straight sounds are broken between them, but that each and every sound is broken. That is a different way of doing things. I'm not against it. We don't do it in our shul, but if you want to do it, I would say to do it after davening. After davening, about Kielak and Chumras, so we'll do the tuwutu, instead of the sheva straight, which he does during the regular davening. As far as the true is concerned, so we have 9 staccato sounds. The Sfaradim and some of the Yekas have a different sound completely. It's a kind of a trembling sound. So we don't have that by us. If you want to do it after davening, that's also okay. Those are the chumras as far as the kolos. Taking breaths is a whole different story. A big dispute in the Rishonim, Shvarim Trua B'Neshima Achas, or B'Shtei Neshimas. So the Shulchan Aruch wants him to fulfill both in Siman Tov Kuf Tzadi, Siv Dalet. He says, in the first 30 kolos we do in the Shema Achas, and the Shmon Esrei we do Shtei Neshimas. If you look carefully, the reason for that is that they used to blow in Shmon Esrei only Tashrat, nothing else. They didn't have what we do. We do Tashrat, Tashat, Tarat for each of the Malchus, Akronos, and Shofars. Therefore, in my view, and the Mishnah Berurah alludes to this, we should do in the Shema Achas both the first 30 and the next 30 that we do.
What are you guys doing?
During, please mute. During Chazaras Hashatz. Also, the Shema Achas. When do we do Shtei Neshimas? Afterwards, in Kaddish Tiskabel, we do the final Kolos, then we do Shtei Neshimas. Our final question. Are the basic minhagim, halach and agada, wearing a talis, should maintain when the Rav delivers the Shabbat Shuvah to Russia, or should the Rav be marbid Torah and Yonah the Yom in the best way he feels, his seal will be mekabel. It is true, there was such a minhag, I remember Rabbi Scholz, the Chorona of the Rocha, would put on a talis, and in the old years, he would actually speak in Yiddish twice a year. Later years, people didn't understand him anymore, he switched back to English, but I think he wore a talis till the end of his services are over there. I am not such a high level. I don't know. I speak in English and I don't wear a talis. I believe that's equally, if not more effective, the tzibur that's in my shul. I think they would view this talis as being somewhat strange to them, not used to it so much. But every rabbi has his minhagim. When it comes to minhagim, we have to say every minhag has a good basis and every rabbi should follow his own minhag. We'll stop here. Next week, we have 14 questions left for Sukkot. If you want to add more, please send them into the Rabbi Dov Shraya before this coming
Monday.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rebbe.